Welcome to Faith Matters. I'm Father Regis Scanlon, a Capuchin Franciscan of the Mid-America Province, and I'm from Denver, Colorado. We're going to consider a question today, a question that's asked by many people. They want to know, what is an annulment with regards to marriage? Well, first of all, we have to distinguish an annulment from a divorce. A divorce is a breaking of a bond that exists between the people, two people, and a divorce is a separation of that bond. An annulment is a declaration that that bond never existed. That bond never existed. For example, the Catholic Church does not recognize a divorce when there's a sacramental marriage, a sacramental bond or a sacramental marriage. But the Catholic Church does realize that at times people will attempt to get married and even in good conscience think that they're married when something is amiss from the very beginning which nullifies the bond so that the bond doesn't exist. However, the Catholic Church says that that bond must be respected and treated as existing until it's proven morally certain that that bond does not exist. And so then there's usually an investigation to see whether or not there is evidence that something was amiss at the beginning when the couple took their wedding vows and establishes the fact that it doesn't exist. And then a decree of nullity is granted. That's what they call an annulment. Now, you're probably saying, well, what do you mean, Father? How can anybody make a mistake like that? Well, it's quite possible. I'll give you one glaring example. I can think of a couple that got married, and 3 months after they were married, and this was in a Catholic church, it was discovered that the groom had a previous bond. In other words, he had been previously married. So the bishop declared that marriage nullified because you can't have two wives. That's just a real obvious example. But there's other examples where these things can happen. Things can sneak in, and people can be even innocently unaware that they're not married. For instance, a person could have the psychological incapacity for marriage. I'll give you another example. A young man and a young woman get married, but it turns out that every time the young man has to make a decision, he discusses it with his wife. His wife gives him a certain opinion that we should do this. And he says, well, let me call my mother first. So he calls Mom, and Mom says, well, I think you should do this. I think your wife is wrong. So he goes back to his wife, and he says, we have to do what Mom says. She says, well, wait a minute, no. You and I are married. It's our decision. He says, no, I have to do what Mom says. That might sound a bit strange, but there are cases, more than once, huh, that this has come up. Here the groom was never psychologically free from his mother. And if you're not psychologically free, then you can't give yourself to another. So if it can be established that this psychological separation between the groom and his mother was never made, if he was not emotionally free, then the church would grant that annulment based on a psychological incapacity for married life. But there are also three main promises that a person makes when they get married. And unless they can make those three promises, the marriage would be invalid. Unless those three elements, if they have to be able to intend those three elements. And what is more, if they intend something against one of those three elements, one of the three essential elements of matrimony, then it would be invalid. They would have to intend it. Consciously, for instance, they might not be aware that it's an invalidating feature of the marriage, but it would be something that they would have to positively intend against this element of marriage. And what are the three elements? Well, first of all, marriage is until death do we part. So if a person thought, well, I'm going to try this marriage for 2 years, and then if it doesn't work out in 2 years, I'm going to rethink the whole situation. Now, here's a person is positively putting something which is contrary to the nature of marriage, because the nature of marriage is until death do we part. And so if that could be proven through witnesses and an investigation, that this was the mind of the person on their wedding day, the marriage would be invalid. I'll give you an example with regards to the second element. Okay? We said the first element was what we call perpetuity, until death do we part. The second element has to do with fidelity. Let us say that a man dated two women, and he married one of the women. And then 2 or 3 months after the wedding, or maybe even a year, he was found dating the other woman that he had dated previously before marriage. One would begin to wonder whether this man realized that he had to give up the other one when he married this one. Well, he might have said yes, yes, thinking he did, but in his heart, he may never have really given her up. And therefore, this, if he had, on his wedding day, if he intended, now he would have to intend that he is not going to give up this other girl and he's going to see her occasionally while he's married to this other one. If that can be proven that that was his mindset, if he admits this and there's witnesses and so forth, then the marriage would be invalid. So that's two ways, huh? There's two essential elements. If you intend anything against either one of these elements, then the marriage is invalid. The first one was perpetuity, until death do we part. The second one was fidelity. If you intend something against fidelity, then that nullifies the marriage. The third one is called the good of children. And this means that you promise on your wedding day to give your partner the right for the use of sexual relations for the sake of children. And this is a promise which is perpetual. It begins on your wedding day and goes throughout your entire marriage. So that if you would intend to block a portion of your married life out to where your partner has no right to ask you for a child, then the marriage would be invalid. For instance, I can think of a case where a man said to his wife, or his fiancée before they got married, "Now, dear, we're not going to have any children until I get my degree." And she said, "Okay." So they got married. And then after 3 years, she decided she wanted a child. And he said, "No." He says, "We said we wouldn't have a child until I got my degree." What this man did was he blocked out the first few years of his married life, giving her the right to have children. And so if this could be proven, then the church would declare that nullified. This is a very important one today, and so you got to be very careful with it, because some women will take a pill, and they'll think, because Planned Parenthood and other organizations tell them, that if you get off the pill and you start having sexual relations and have a child, remember that there's 3 months after you get off that you could conceive a deformed child. So don't have sexual relations 3 months after you get off the pill. And so if a woman on her wedding day is thinking, aha, down the road there's 3 months that he has no right to ask me for a child, not only would this taking of the pill be a mortal sin, but would be illicit, it would actually invalidate the marriage, because she would be blocking out 3 months, or a period, where she would not give that man the right for sexual relations with the sake of children. So there you have it. Those are the three main reasons, the three promises, huh? The three essential elements of the promises of matrimony. If we intend anything positively against those, then that invalidates the marriage. But that has to be proven. But that would be the grounds for an annulment. So now you know what an annulment is. So you might go out and explain this to Catholic people. Once again, you know, we are to let our light shine, not put it under a bushel basket. We say that. Why do we say it? Because the faith matters. And so spread the faith. Thank you for listening, and we'll be with you again.